Curtain Radio. Welcome back, everybody. Well, we are about to catch up with a man with a rather adventurous career, most of us would think, definitely. Mike McGettin, known as Spike, has written a book on his life as a commercial diver working in the oil and gas industry from, as he refers to it, the cowboy days of the 80s. He's been all around Asia, India, Australasia and Africa. I'm very happy to say he's healthy and he joins us now. Good afternoon. Is it Mike or Spike?
Yes, Spike. Everyone else calls me that, except Mum.
Except your mum, or mums would never call you a nickname, that's for sure. It's really good to speak to you, Spike. I mean...
Thanks, Jenny.
It's a pleasure. I don't know where to start. I mean, we take you guys for granted, let me tell you, right? Number one.
Yep.
We can't even imagine that people are down under the water taking on these life-changing experiences. Spike, what got you involved in the first place?
Well, it was purely by accident. That's pretty much what inspired me to write the story in the first place, because I just left home to travel the world, went surfing, ended up on a job in Singapore. While I was on that job, I met divers. It was actually a diving job. I got there because I was a mechanical fitter. And, and it just sort of went from there, and then, it just sort of snowballed into all of a sudden I became a diver.
Well, obviously you love the water because you love your surfing, but that's on top of the water, not underneath the water.
And yes, very much.
So a lot of people would sort of, really think very carefully about going, well, what is the danger aspect involved in this?
Well, it's similar to an astronaut. You don't just come home, you don't just shut the door and... Oh, open the door and walk out. You're pretty much stuck there, so you're relying on a lot of other people to keep you alive, as well as your own intuition,
Incredible.
Quite often it's a natural way of surviving stuff, So.
Well, it comes from a natural instinct, I guess, and expertise. Was there a lot of training that you had to follow?
Well, the training, I got in through the back door, which makes my story a little bit more radical, you might say.
Yeah.
But a lot of the people I work with have been at school. So in the earlier days, some of them were in school for 2 years to do the same job that I started out at. So, and it's a very expensive procedure.
Is it?
But at the end of the day, it actually takes years to learn. You don't learn it at school. You only learn it on the job. So it's learned by experience. Like a lot of jobs, I guess you get better as you go.
Well, you would, but you really probably in this instance can't afford to make mistakes.
No, you can't.
Mm.
No.
So can I ask you then, I mean, I don't know where to start here, because you go out, there's obviously a problem that you asked to go out and fix up, right? Is that through Oceaneering Companies, would that be right?
Yes, contracting companies. I started here with Oceaneering actually in Perth years ago when I first moved to Perth. And, so they get a project to do, whether it's building a new field or whether it's to repair an old one.
Gosh, so...
And so it's all put forward by engineers and we go out and finish the project for them.
So in different parts of the world, of course, that you go out into, and you travel by ship out to the location, do you?
That also forms a lot of different ways. We fly and sail and sometimes by train. If we're in the UK, we do a lot of training movements. But, pretty much flying, and then we go out by vessel. Or sometimes we helicopter out to the vessel. The vessel's already working.
My gosh.
We just arrive by helicopter, go down, get a briefing, get told what part of the job we'll be involved in, and just take it from there, get ready to go and do it.
You make it sound as though you're going to the shop to get milk. No, seriously.
Pretty much.
I guess like you compare it to being an astronaut, it's something that you take on board that you're comfortable with and you get on with it. You don't analyse everything like we probably do every day with the what-ifs. You just get...
You can't. You sort of... like I've said in the book, people that stay on this job are obviously very comfortable in the water.
Yeah.
It's a different environment and it has its own challenges.
I bet it
does. Sometimes I'm training young guys that are coming through and I can see their face, I can see what's in their eyes from remembering what it was like when I was there.
Yeah.
It takes a while to get acclimatised to what it is you're doing. But at the end of the day, like every job, you sort of tune in And sometimes you just want to tune out.
Well, there's challenges in every job, but I think there's a few more in yours. So you get out to the location, which is obviously you pinpoint exactly where there is a problem, and it's normally a gas leak. And what sort of, and oil, and what sort of depths have you gone to?
Well, the shallowest I've worked is around 12 metres in India, which is not, it sounds shallow and it doesn't sound very dangerous, but in fact that's actually more dangerous than diving deep. The deeper stuff what I did was for Technip over in America, in the Gulf of Mexico in the American sector, and that was 267 metres.
Oh my gosh.
And it was like swimming in a gin palace because it was crystal clear visibility and I could see 140 metres up to the towards stuff coming down to us. So
you would have said that some beautiful things.
Yeah, that was very bizarre because the helium we breathe transfers temperature very quickly. So 1 minute you'd be stinking hot and then the next minute you'd be stinking cold. So it's pretty bizarre. And also, I'm a bit of a talker, like to have a chat, but when you're on helium with that much, it's so hard to talk and it's so hard to listen to people that the conversations were kept to a minimum, you know.
Am I thinking it's helium that that makes you sound funny when you do speak?
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
my gosh.
Daffy Duck and all that.
Like Donald Duck.
Yeah, Donald Duck.
Trying to be serious. So you have communication with, you'd have another worker down there. You're not just on your own?
Yes. No, there's two of us now. When I first started out, there just used to be one person in the water.
Oh, gee. How do they keep track of you? How do they keep track of you from the ship up the top?
Well, we're connected with umbilicals. We have communications, hat cameras. They're watching us 24/7.
Oh, okay.
Whether we're sleeping in our bed in the chamber or whether we're out working in the water, we're being watched
okay.
all the time.
So to get down to the...
Nothing on us.
This is like Big Brother, isn't it, underwater?
Yeah.
So when you to get down to these depths, the shallow one, do you go it down in a cage or a bell or...?
Yeah, well, saturation is saturation. So you're living inside chambers and you go to work via a bell. So you go into another chamber and then that gets sealed and you pressure through just like the astronauts do when they go for a spacewalk. We go into another chamber and then seal it. Lock off and then gets put down to the depth that we're working at. So we normally live 15 metres above whatever depth it is we're working at.
Oh, so the vessel that you're in is underwater most of the time?
No, the vessel is on the surface, just driving around like every normal ship.
Yeah.
But I'm locked in a chamber inside that vessel and there'll be 12 of us.
Oh.
And we do 12-hour shifts with the shifts overacting each other. So,
gosh,
we have four teams working, 8 hours a shift in the water, pretty much.
You'd have to like each other, that's for sure.
Well, sometimes you don't, but you just have to deal with it.
It's like a marriage in isolation.
Yeah, a lot of pretending, a lot of getting by. And sometimes it's hard work and sometimes it's not. And well, we're with a lot of good people, so
yeah,
it makes it a lot easier. But every now and then you have the bad luck to be put in with someone that it's not so much he's a bad person or you're a bad person, it's just a personality clash.
Yeah.
You know?
So tell us what you're actually doing when you are underwater physically.
Yeah, well, we hook up all the pipelines. So a lot of the time a platform will be installed and then all the pipelines will be laid to it. And so we'll go down and we'll link up the pipelines to the platform, to the risers on the platform. So we'll tie that in and make sure it's all sealed.
Yeah.
And then we'll run in the hydraulics and the power, which run all the wellheads. So when they push a button to open a valve on a wellhead that might be 5 miles away, we've connected it all up. And when they push the button on the engine room on the platform, then the valve opens up on the seabed. 5 or 6 miles away.
How do you weld underwater? I know it's a very naive question, but...
Yeah, well, it's not much, sort of not done as much these days, but there are, like, when I used to work here in Perth in the harbour, we used to do a lot of wet stick welding, which, funny enough, you're just using the normal welding machine, except you wear a pair of rubber gloves. And if you don't wear the rubber gloves, you get electrocuted.
Yeah, just by the by.
If you do wear the rubber gloves, you weld away merrily.
Oh, I can't believe this. No,
it's bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it honestly is. We're on land. It's not pretty, not that pretty up here at the moment, let me tell you. So being underwater is probably a lot more peaceful. But can you tell us what you do see and admire when you are underwater? You said the deepest area was possibly the best.
I suppose the animals would be, especially up here in the northwest where the visibility is pretty good and the sea life is impressive. There's tons of fish everywhere, there's lots of sharks, there's lots of other stuff, and if you get the book and read it, you'll have a few good stories of the sharks and stuff that we encounter up there. Makes it pretty interesting. I think that my favourite jobs would be in places like that, which there's not many places like the northwest here, up off Dampier. It's quite unique. There's a few other spots.
Beautiful.
Yeah, but then it's challenges. Like sometimes we're working in mud where we can't see anything and we're actually looking with our hands. So everything we do is we can't see, so we've got to feel it.
Gosh,
they're like a blind person, and we're dealing with lots of weight too, like tons of machinery if we're installing stuff. So,
my gosh! So, how long has it been that you went before you started? How long have you been doing this now, Mike?
Well, I first left New Zealand in 1984. I bypassed Australia because all my friends used to go, "Oh, I'm going to travel the world," and they'll get to Australia to earn the money and then never leave.
Guess who did it?
1984 and April was it? October of 1984, I ended up in Dubai by accident as a diver, which I'd lied about because I wasn't a diver. So I had to, basically just,
on the job.
Get by. And that was at 1984, October, so 32 years.
Amazing. Good on you for doing this.
36 years.
So have there been any times when you've been underwater on the job, Spike, where you felt your life might have been in danger?
Oh, yeah, quite a few times, but nothing enough to panic and lose it, because that's actually what's going to kill you if you panic, you know. So there's been plenty of instances where if things hadn't worked out right, I probably wouldn't be standing here talking to you now. But on the other side, that's sort of around the corner all the time, and unless you're not prepared for the worst or... you know, it can go terribly wrong terribly fast.
So you've got very strong safety issues that you turn to. And what are the risks?
Well, there's a young guy in the North Sea a few years ago who lost his umbilical. The boat did a runoff and he was left back on the job.
No.
He survived. I think the movie and the book is called The Last Breath. That's a sort of indication of what can go wrong when it does go wrong. He's actually very lucky to be alive anywhere else in the world apart from cold water, and he would be dead. But our industry is very strict on protocols and how we go about our job. I work for a company that is one of the best in that sort of scene, where they really go out of their way to make sure that we're on top of the game, you might say.
Yeah, so it's
to work for them.
So it's a thriving industry, obviously, that, like we on land, don't get to hear about that much, but we want our gas and oil supplies to continue. So
yes.
There's many hundreds of people doing the sort of work that you do?
There'd probably be about 1,000 people, maybe 2,000. I'd be just throwing a number out there. But I know when I first started working in Australia and joined the divers union here, which I had to be employed, which I don't mind, there was 350 people in the union, so that's about 350 people doing the job here. Now I would put Australia probably be around 1,000, and I reckon maybe not that many, maybe around 700, but worldwide maybe 5,000. There wouldn't be 10,000 of us, maybe.
Big industry. So there's constant maintenance required on pipes underwater. Because would they not eventually corrode?
Yes, they do. And quite often our work is actually to go and find those leaks. they've got all these smart technology now where they send something down the, what I call a pig. Yeah. They send a smart pig down the pipeline that tells them all the dramas, and then we'll go along and fine-tune the areas where the pig has picked up certain bad readings or whatever. Oh, right. I'm trying to think of the right word, but I can't bring it out right now. But, so we'll go down and fine-tune that.
So the ocean's a big area, and this form of detection goes on all the time or every couple of years to check?
All companies have their own systems in place for keeping an eye on what's going on with their assets. We call them assets.
Yeah.
But, we haven't done that much work up in the northwest here lately, so they'll be due for doing some maintenance stuff. So I imagine the boys around Australia will start getting busy, hopefully next year.
What's your layback? You are so laid. Mind you, the state of the world, I think I might join you. Just go down 10,000 leagues under the sea. It's horrible.
I'm a bit annoyed because everyone's had a couple of months off here and I was over at work at the time, so I missed the whole lot. Everyone's going, it was really nice. There's no one around. You can't do anything.
Spike.
Really relaxing.
You were in isolation where you were.
Yes.
Very true. Now, tell us about your family. How has your wife, Christina, dealt with what you chose to do? And you've got two children.
Yes. So Christina's been very supportive of the job. It's been very hard for her too because, especially the early days when we moved over here, we didn't know anyone. We had a few friends from here and there and everywhere. So it hasn't been hard for her, and luckily we're really good friends. I think that's why we're still together.
Yeah.
We're still pretty passionate with each other, so that's a good thing because long months apart when we were young.
Yeah.
I met Christina before I first left New Zealand. We were good friends before I left, and we got together again after I ended up working in the Middle East for a year, so we're about 3 years apart. So she's sort of hanging with me. We still get on very good. She's just taken off to go and get some cat food for our cats. So
bit of normality in life.
Yeah, that's it. And hopefully she's listening on radio, and if she is, hello, honey.
Yeah, hello. Hello, Christina. Are you safe at the moment? How many more years do you think ahead of you doing this sort of work? Is there a use-by date, Spike?
Well, there is now with the sort of, I'm getting towards the 60 mark, so I'm starting to look at the last few years. If I go supervising, I could get a few more years. If I stay in the water,
yeah,
I'm pretty much on the same. 5 years, maybe.
Yeah. You'd have to have a certain level of health, wouldn't you, too, and fitness?
Yeah. Well, the good thing is that the job itself, you need to be reasonably fit and you have to be healthy because we do nearly three medicals by the time we get put into SAT and go under pressure. But also the surfing that I do keeps me fit, especially on the West Coast here where we surf quite big surf. That keeps me fit for the job and the job keeps me fit for my surfing. So not too bad.
It's a win-win. It's a win-win. Look, and the book...
My sons are... I've got a 32-year-old and he's got... three kids at the moment.
Oh, lovely.
And so he doesn't live too far away. And my youngest son, he's a builder, and he's still living at home looking after the house while I'm away, looking after the animals and stuff. So, both my kids have managed to get through the times. I've missed so much of their life growing up, but we'll still get on.
Yeah, well, look, your career choice through the love of water has obviously been fabulous for you, and the book you've put together is just fantastic. I've got to say, huge congratulations to you. There's some terrific photographs of your luxurious living quarters. Not.
It's
truth. It's incredible. And it's called Walking on Ocean Floors. How can people track down your book?
Well, they can go straight onto the website, which is walkingonoceanfloors.com. They can go through have a sneak peek at the book, and there's a video on there. There's a couple of reviews. The reviews have been quite good.
Yeah.
Feedback's been very good. People have been loving reading it. So, and they can get on there, and if they go through that website, that'll email to me. And if they live in Perth, I can post it to them.
Yep.
Or if they live outside, I can post it, or it can be picked up from from here if they want to save the $9 of postage, you know. So
if there's any surfers listening, they might like to take this on as a career like you have.
Yeah, you never know.
You well, never know.
People coming around. It's not too bad. We work six months a year. Mainly I work 4 or 5 months a year. So.
Oh, okay, well, that's an advantage, isn't it?
That's why I still do it. So I've got plenty of time to surf when I'm at home, and I get 100% family time when I'm home, as opposed to coming home from work late and all that sort of stuff. So.
All the very best. It's been great to speak to you, Mike. Congratulations on everything you do, and we thank you very much for our gas and oil supplies.
Yeah. And thank you for the radio station. Thank you for the chat. And,
that's a pleasure.
Hopefully people out there want to get involved and read the book.
Yep. It'd be great. When you write your next one, let us know.
Yes, won't be far away. I keep getting hassled.
Good on you, Mike. Thank you. That's Spike McGettigan with the book, and it's called Walking on Ocean Floors.